Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning. I was getting impatient. Boy, it's time to get back on this. We got a lot to talk about this morning. We got okra fritters. Ty sent suggested okra fritters, which I think is a fine idea, a really fine idea. You know, how do you make okra fritters? Well, you like fritters. You make them like hush puppies, but you add sliced okra to the mixture. I've seen that done. You know, I think you need it a little bigger, but that's great. I love that idea, too. It's a great thing. Mary Frances, I'm going to say hello to your dad, JP. JP, see, JP, if you listen to us, you get messages from your daughter. Mary Frances says hello. She's listening too. Pink Eye Purple Hull peas. This is great. Beautiful Pink Eye Purple Hull peas. Top pick Pink Eye Purple Hull peas from Bruce. Got a picture of them. That's TPPEPHP for short. In case it's hard to remember, top pick Pink Eye Purple Hull peas. All you've got to do is remember TPPEPHP. Easy enough, right? Bruce, thanks for that picture. How hurricane-proof is my bald cypress? You know, that's a good question. I think it's pretty good. Bald cypress tend to get topped out. That is, they tend to lose the tips, the tops, more readily than some other trees. But because of that, they rarely do significant damage. So I do see after hurricanes that they get topped out, and then they begin flat topping, and you know that's kind of how they look. But they are very wind firm. I have never seen a cypress go over from the roots, which is when you have the most trouble. Is when a tree goes over from the roots, you can get into real problems. So yes, a bald cypress is a fairly wind safe tree. It does not mean it won't get topped out, but it won't top out a lot. Just a little break off a little bit, not enough to do any damage. It's a good tree to have near your house during a windstorm because it's not going to cause a lot of damage. Sherry, I am so glad you want to talk about pines. I'm listening.
Yeah, I'd like to identify the pines that I got all around my backyard.
Yes, ma'am.
22 of them.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, around there. I guess long leaf, you know, very, very long leaf, and they're cylinder. They don't look brown. They're bright. They're green, and they have no, like a brown pine look. They don't look at all like that.
Okay, I'm thinking. So you don't think they're let's start with the cone size.
Yeah, huge. It could kill you.
Yeah.
So heavy and full of sap.
And I mean, really big cones. I mean they're
really
like
big. Really, like, really big. Yep. Yeah,
that's easy. Long leaf.
It is a long leaf pine. Oh, okay.
Now short leaf will have big cones too, but if you're saying it's really, really big, it's long leaf. There's nothing else. And, you know, the other way to tell, and I always tell this for people with longleaf, if they don't see the cones, look up in the air. And one of the interesting things about longleaf is that it doesn't have any twigs. Think about this. It doesn't have any twigs. It's like each branch ends, it's as thick as your thumb when it ends.
Uh-huh.
And then the needles come out from that. If it's a slash pine, it's more twiggy. You got more twigs that are about the size of your little finger. And it ends in more of those. If it's a loblolly, it's got a lot of twigs. If it's a short leaf, it's got a lot of twigs. So the, one thing is the longer the needles, the fewer twigs it has. It's just
No twigs, and the needles are so long that I actually use them to stake things. If you get them when they're good and green, you can literally tie them up to something.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that's pretty easy. You got longleaf.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a great one. It's a great tree. Of course, it's the original tree of Alabama. They can live to be 400, 500 years, and they are very long-lived trees. Probably longer, actually, and they're great trees. Treat it with great respect. You know, it's one of the reasons I say that people move to Fairhope and Daphne originally is and Mobile is not only because it was on the bay, but because of these longleaf. And people thought the longleaf were healing trees, literally. They wrote about it. There were ads placed in magazines in Boston saying, come to the Gulf Coast so you can live under the longleaf because the longleaf are the healing trees. And we now know that, in fact, there was a little bit of truth to that, maybe a lot of truth to that. One of the things is longleaf pine is hypoallergenic. That is, it does not produce the kind of allergens that other trees produce. So people who were having problems with allergies from oaks and other trees would move to places with longleaf pine because their allergies went away.
Well, that's all good news.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I say, I got a pretty small yard, but there's 22 trees surrounding, and then I live next to a vacant lot, and there's the pines there, too.
Yeah.
And so all my container plants are grown under these pines, and I've got pretty good luck. I mean, some of them plants have been in a container for 15-plus years, you know, and they do really, really good.
Yeah. So, Good. And, you know, the other thing I like about longleaf is it does seem to be easier to garden around for a lot of reasons. The high shade of longleaf, the high open shade of longleaf is just perfect. So, you know, Sherry, the thing I tell people is it's not so much the light you get overhead that's important. It's the light till 11 o'clock in the morning and the light after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's very important to your garden. And longleaf allows that side light to just pour in because the limbs are so high.
Yep.
If you've got a live oak, it is designed to intercept that side light. So it you don't get the side light from the live oaks nearly as well as you do from longleaf.
Unfortunately, I do have a lot of either their water oak or pin oak. I got a couple of them intermixed too.
Yeah.
And like you say, 20 years to grow, 20 years to die.
That's
right. I am constantly picking up large branches.
Right. Yeah, and so that's it. So pin oak. So tell me, Sherry, what, because this is interesting, and I have this survey. It's an ongoing survey. What would you call a pin oak?
A scrub tree, non-worthy of having in your yard.
All right.
Belongs in the woods.
All right. Well, all trees belong in the woods, and including pines. Well, the water oaks and laurel oaks are weedy. They're upland laurel oaks. I think that what people call pin oaks, I think, in the South is generally upland laurel oak. I'm not sure. Everybody has a different name, but they're weedy because they produce a lot of seeds. And so their strategy is, and there's nothing wrong with this strategy, it's just that they take advantage of humans this way because humans let them take advantage of us, is that they say, okay, I'm going to produce a lot of seeds, and then that way I can continue to exist in this environment anytime there's a gap, and humans are always creating gaps. So I produce a lot of seeds and grow fast and die young, and that's what they do.
You're not kidding with the seeds. Some of it, they're so thick, you got to watch because you'll slip on them.
That's right.
Because they're like little rollers. And unfortunately, the squirrels love them. I've got so many squirrel nests I can see in the trees.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Sherry, it's good to hear from you. And I'm glad you got a long leaf. And it's
Thank
a
you.
Nice thing. Cherish it. Don't, you know, one of the problems, can I say something real quickly?
Sure.
People who have longleaf, one of the problems that they've had is that these longleafs kind of grew up in an environment with normal rainfall, and we get normal rainfall here. And then they put irrigation out, and if they irrigate the lawn all the time, it can kill those trees because they're very old trees that grew up in sandy soils where it would drain well. And then they irrigate every day, and the roots rot on the longleaf. So don't over-irrigate, and I don't think you do, but if you've got...
I don't, my plants, and I don't have grass.
Yep.
It's all pine straw, like in the woods.
Yeah, they will love that.
They do.
Hey, Sherry, it's good to hear from you.
You too, bye.
Bye.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon Sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played. Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian. Just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian. She loved her brother, I remember back when he was fixing up a 49 and in. He told her little sister gonna ride the wind up around the moon and back again. He never got farther than Vietnam. I was standing there with her when the telegram come, but Lily. Now he's lying somewhere about a million miles from Meridian.
Attention Mobile. Announcing a one-day sale Saturday, August 4th of the best Mobile Bay waterfront opportunities in a decade. The final phase of a successful Mobile Bay community just 10 minutes from downtown stalled during the recession. It's time to sell at below the market prices. Saturday, August 4th only, $10,000 off all dockable waterfront home sites with direct access to Mobile Bay and the Gulf of Mexico. $5,000 off all water access home sites with free covered boat slips. Some examples, direct bay access with covered boat slips was $19,900, now $14,900. 2 acres dockable waterfront with covered boat slips was $44,900, now $34,900. Buy on Mobile Bay in a prime location with spectacular boating and fishing for 50 cents on the dollar or less. Direct bay access, $14,900. Dockable waterfront, $34,900. Call or click 877-BIG-VIEW.com for an early appointment. That's 877-BIG-VIEW, 877-244-8439.
I'm Dr. Brian Heller with Southern Cancer Center. I'm often asked how I got into the field of oncology. In medical school, I wasn't sure what kind of doctor I wanted to be until that first day on a rotation in the cancer ward. I met a young girl with leukemia who had a huge impact on me. After that, I met another cancer patient and then another. I had never before experienced interacting with patients on such a deep level. That's when I knew I wanted to take care of patients with cancer. At Southern Cancer Center, I also want to take care of you. I want to navigate you from patient to survivor.
Hi, this is Cam Marston. For 20 years, I've studied workplace and workforce trends to help my clients adjust to the changes that are shaping employees, customers, and workplaces. In my new show, What's Working with Cam Marston, I bring that research to you. We'll discuss the trends that are shaping your workplace. What's Working with Cam Marston.
What's Working with Cam Marston, Wednesdays at 6 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Dan, I'm looking at your photograph. I got to put my glasses on again. It's a little dim, so I'm looking at the bark. I'm going to identify the tree for you. Dan asked me real quickly how to identify a laurel oak. I wonder if I can do this very quickly. There are two kinds of there are three oaks that are somewhat similar in my mind, and that people tend to get a little mixed up. Their bark is somewhat similar: water oak, laurel oak, and upland laurel oak. And they're all very different trees. I have a fondness for the lowland laurel oak. I'll admit, grown on the right site, they can be very pretty. Water oaks can be nice too. Water oaks. It's easier to tell you. They're all similar. They all have a kind of a grayish bark. The laurel oaks, the bark will tend to be a little bit darker, but it's a smooth bark. It's not flaky like white oak, not flaky like most red oaks. It's kind of a smooth gray bark, or generally smooth, not in little flakes. But the other thing is that a water oak will have a leaf that's shaped like a kite. You know what I'm talking about? You know how a kite's shaped? Do you remember flying kites? kind of a diamond shaped, but the diamond, but the middle, the crossbar is sitting a little higher, right? So it looks like most of the leaves, not all, but most of the leaves on a water oak look like a kite. Laurel oaks and upland laurel oak both have leaves that are roughly like elliptical, long ovals without that kind of kite-shaped. The lowland laurel oak will look like a diamond, sort of like a long narrow diamond, with the widest part of the leaf about the middle, and laurel oak and upland laurel oak will just look like an elongated leaf. So there it is. You know, if what else can I tell you that makes it simple? But Dan, send me a picture, and we can certainly give it a try. And Dan, I'm gonna look through your pictures here to make sure I can see that tree a little better. It's a little one of the pictures is a little dark, and I don't have a great computer screen, so I'm gonna have to use Charlie's magnifying glass here in just a minute. Taxman, it's good to hear from you.
Bill.
Yes, sir.
Let me give you bad news.
Uh-oh.
But you got to learn by doing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Cantaloupe, not enough sunshine.
Oh, man.
I was worried about that. They sprouted good, but not enough. Anyway, I'm going to get rid of all of them. I mean, I'm just going to dump them. But I got my good dirt, and I've been very successful with collards and okra. And that's what's going in there next week.
All right, good.
But anyway, no, you got to have plenty of sun. I didn't have but about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not enough.
Yeah.
They need sun from daylight to dark.
Yep.
But anyway, okra, I've done okra in containers before, and collards do great in containers, Charlie. So try some, Charlie.
All right.
Thank you there, Bill. Bye.
Hey, Tax Man, good to hear from you.
Okay, bye.
Yes, sir. So
hope he had better luck with his collard. Did you say cauliflower?
Collards.
Collards. I haven't tried them in containers.
I think he said collards.
Yeah.
Don't think he said cauliflower.
But are we fast coming up to time to plant for the fall garden?
Yes, it is. And next week, that is going to be our dedicated show is planting for this fall garden, getting ready for it. It's a very hard thing to do.
Bring a notepad so I can write this stuff down?
You need to. Hey, Robert, I'm listening. What's up?
Yes, sir. I have a property on Perdido Key on the bay.
Yeah.
It's low. You know, it's only about a plus 2.5 foot elevation.
Yeah.
And it's got St. Augustine growing on it. And I'm just looking for a way to thicken up that St. Augustine, what kind of fertilizer we might put. Unfortunately, the ground is just sand. And the water table's about 2.5 feet down.
Yeah, so the things are working, I guess. I mean, St. Augustine is somewhat salt tolerant, but not greatly salt tolerant. And when you're that low, the groundwater is going to be very salty, and that makes it hard for grasses to persist. So rarely are problems with lawns the result of lack of fertilizer. Now I will agree that in those sandy soils that you've got, you probably need to fertilize a little bit more, but I'm not going to tell you that it's going to make a difference. There are no miracle fertilizers. I know that people who manufacture fertilizers would like you to believe that, but they're all pretty much the same. I don't think you need, even on those sandy soils, I don't think you need a lot of phosphorus because it doesn't move through the soil, whereas nitrogen and potassium do. So any fertilizer that's low in phosphorus is fine.
Okay.
I wouldn't juice it too much. I prefer to use a fertilizer that releases slowly because I know I'm not going to fertilize. What the ideal thing to do with fertilizer, if you're using a chemical fertilizer, the kind of common stuff that they sell at the stores, would be to fertilize very lightly about every 2 months. And nobody does that. So they instead put all this fertilizer in there and it just explodes, and then the yard goes hungry the rest of the year. But what I would do is, and it's pretty easy to do, is to use cottonseed meal, because you know when you use it, there's nothing miraculous about it except that it releases fairly slowly. And when you use it, it means that you don't have to keep thinking about what am I going to fertilize with now. And it tends to build up a little bit. Even in your sandy soils, it'll still build up. But, Robert, I just will warn you, I don't know that it's grass. It's going to have a really hard time with that salt, and I don't know that you're going to see a huge amount of difference with any fertilizer.
Right. Well, what it is, and I'm going to describe it incorrectly, I'm sure, but it has like a ton of runners and not a whole thick leaf pattern.
Yeah.
You know, it's covering the ground, but, you know, St. Augustine, to me, you know, you mow it about 2 inches high, and it's a nice grass to walk on. And this is covering the ground, but it's, I want to say, when you look at it, it's 50% those runners.
Yeah. Here's what I would say. That's interesting. First off, mow it higher than 2 inches. You really need to. It's very important. And when I say more than 2 inches, I mean 4 inches. If you don't raise your mower to 4 inches, you're missing a bet. So raise it as high as your mower will go, basically.
Right.
And that's going to make some difference. It does sound like it's stressed, and it may be stressed from just salt water. One of the interesting things is, of course, is that if you're irrigating with a well, are you irrigating with a well?
Yeah,
you probably got a lot of salt water in that well.
Yeah.
Check to see if you have a lot of salt in. Check to see what the saline levels, salinity is in your well.
Yeah.
Because that means you're doubly stressing it because you're getting that. So what do you do? And there are some grasses that do better in highly saline situations. St. Augustine does better than most. But there are some that do much better in those highly saline situations. Or, being that you're on the beach, use the native vegetation that's very nice there, and don't expect to have, you know, just great lawns everywhere on the beach. It's not a place where lawns grow well. But some of the new seashore paspalums will do better in salty situations. They may have other problems, but they will do better in those salty situations. But it sounds to me like salt. The one thing you can do, given where you are, maybe the most important thing now is to raise that, since it is stressed, raise your lawnmower as much as possible during this, particularly during summer.
I got you.
Okay.
Well, listen, I thank you much.
All right.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Robert. Roy, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, I've got a problem with a couple of things I'm going to ask you about. I've got some azalea bushes around my front yard. There's about 300 feet of those things out there. And they're very old. They're about 65 years old. And all of a sudden, in the last few years, they started to grow huge. And some of them are 8 foot tall. I haven't trimmed them back in a good while. And they're growing out into the yard on each side. When is the best time to cut those things back?
Well, once they've shown a proclivity, a tendency to get that big, you know, here's what you can do. You can cut them back. So they're going to be that big again within 2 years. And it's going to be really hard. I always say it's really hard. If an azalea is in a bad place where it's actually growing out into the driveway, it's really hard to control the growth. I mean, because you could cut it all the way to the ground, and the first year it'll be 6 feet tall after you cut it back. The second year it'll be 8 feet tall again. And the problem is that you lose all your blooms because you've cut it all the way to the ground. So it's just this perpetual. So maybe what you need to do is move the azaleas. And let me tell you how to do it. I'm just going to suggest this. Go ahead and take a branch. Charlie's telling me I got to take a break. Can you hold on, Roy, and let me come back and let's take a break. And let me tell you. Let me make a suggestion, okay?
Okay.
All right, hold on just a second. We're going to be back. You know, if you want to call me, you can call me. You can just call me right now. and we'll talk. Jim, I'm going to identify that caterpillar for you. Dan, I got your tree figured out. That's what I thought it was. We're going to be back.
This information update brought to you by Truett Insurance and Bonding in Daphne. When you need home, auto, or business insurance, do it with Truett. Call 625-2600 or visit our website, truettinsurance.com. Do it with Truett.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
Well, skies will be partly cloudy today. Look for scattered afternoon thunderstorms with temperatures in the mid-90s. Tonight, isolated evening thunderstorms, lows in the mid-70s. And for Monday, scattered thunderstorms with highs in the lower 90s. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
Celebrate your independence during the month of July with a Liberty Safe during Mike Ward's Scratch and Dent Truckload Sale, now going on. Save hundreds on slightly blemished Liberty Safes with a lifetime replaceable warranty and a fire or attempted break-in. Best of all, have your Liberty Safe delivered up to 50 miles ground floor at no extra charge. Financing for 12 months at 0% interest is available with approved credit. Just look for the giant Liberty Safe at exit 5B, I-65 in Moffitt and Mobile. Call 471-1137.
Hey, Mr. World here, about to experience one of the world's fastest fighter jets. It reminds me of Eyeglass World, the world's best way to buy glasses, because their in-store labs can help you get your glasses super fast. Like, same-day fast. Wear them home today fast. Whew. Better pack a parachute fast.
Eyeglass World, the world's best way to buy glasses. Come get two pairs for $78. Visit eyeglassworld.com for store locations and offer details.
Nothing is more important than protecting your family and property. That's why you should make a free call right now to Vivint, the number one smart home services provider in the U.S. Vivint will make your home safer and more secure with a state-of-the-art system that's so simple to use. Vivint smart home specialists provide award-winning monitoring of your system 24/7, 365 to respond to any emergency, even when you can't. And with the 4.5-star rated Vivint smart home mobile app, control your entire house from anywhere. Locks, cameras, security system, all at your fingertips on your mobile device. Call Vivint now and get a free quote, professional installation, and full smart home service for as little as $2 per day. Equipment purchase or service agreement required. Conditions apply. Call now. A smart home is a safer home. So protect your family and your property, home or business, with a Vivint smart home system.
Call 800-432-8430. That's 800-432-8430. Call now. 800-432-8430. 800-432-8430.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, want to know how much your peers earn and spend? Here are the services that will tell you. Also, inside the social media world of pro athletes, find out how they use LinkedIn. Plus, if you had 10 seconds to guess how much you spend each month on digital services and subscriptions, chances are you'd be way off. And a new list of the best big cities in which to live and work. That and more on This Weekend. This Weekend with Gordon Deal, Sunday afternoons at 1 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that is where all
Okay, enough. Listen, David picked his first gagooza, 2.5 feet long, beautiful thing, beautiful looking thing, David. I'm very interested in your, David, I'm very interested, and you will have to call to report in on your jelly palm cheesecake, if indeed you choose to make jelly palm cheesecake. We're going to have to be talking about jelly palms a little bit more next week. Dan, let me tell you, Dan, you've got the tree that you're taking, giving me a picture of, I want you, Dan, to go smell those leaves. Before I tell you, I ought to make you smell the leaves first. But I'm going to tell you right away, crush a few of those leaves, break a branch. What does it smell like? Smells like camphor? That's camphor tree. camphor tree. It's the Japanese camphor tree, Chinese camphor tree that has become a little bit of a nuisance. Spreads around a lot. It's an interesting tree. It's very seedy, very weedy. You've seen lots of them. You've pulled lots of them. That camphory smell, there it is. It's actually in the cinnamon tree family, from the same trees that we get cinnamon from, at least one kind of cinnamon, Cinnamomum. These cannot be used for cinnamon. They can be used to give an odor of camphor. Wherever you want an odor of camphor, that's what you got there, Dan. Swallowtail butterfly, that's what you got, Jim. One of the swallowtails, the big, beautiful butterflies that you saw flitting around there, that's what it is, a big swallowtail butterflies. That's its caterpillar. A lot of people plant parsley specifically to attract that. You know, the parsley is hard to keep going this time of year. If it's old parsley, I just let them have it because it's hard to do it, and they'll eat it down, and that keeps it from flowering. And actually, they may actually preserve it. That's a weird thing. But we can talk about that a little more because I need to get back to Roy. Let's talk about these azaleas real quick. You ready? Roy, you there?
Should be.
Yeah, Roy. Well, I guess we lost him maybe. Hey, Roy, listen, if you're still listening. So we've got some azaleas that have gotten too big for their britches. They started growing. They're probably Southern Indians, and they're now growing over into the driveway. And Roy's thought was, when do I cut them back? Well, the problem with cutting them back is they're going to be the same size in 2 years. Meanwhile, you've lost the blooms for those 2 years. You see what I'm saying? So you kind of miss the – it just doesn't work. Here's the thing to do, Roy. Begin preparing for this now. If you don't want to move the azaleas, you want to keep the azaleas, but you don't. You can take a branch on the non-driveway side, on the side of the azalea that's not on the driveway, bend that branch over, bury it in the ground with a little bit of the leaf sticking up, pin it down in the ground, and just leave it there. Leave it there. And next spring, cut it off from the mother plant. See what I'm saying? You got a new azalea started. It's much farther away from the driveway. It'll be the same azalea as the mother plant. You hearing this, Roy? It's good. And then you take the azalea that's too close to the driveway and you cut it down, and you don't even worry about it. You just dig it up or cut it down. We'll talk about how to get rid of it when you come back. But that's the way to do it. Go ahead and start an azalea, and it won't cost you anything. It's very easy to do. You'll have a new azalea that will be farther away from the driveway, and that'll solve your problems much easier. Ah, Dan, so now you know what I'm talking about. So, Dan, go out and smell it. Go out and smell it. Dan's asked me about this tree, the camphor tree. Go smell it, Dan. You won't ever forget it. Rob, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I have a Satsuma tree / bush that was mature 16 years ago when we moved onto the property. It has produced beautifully over the years. It comes out of the ground. It doesn't have a main trunk. It's got five main trunks, if you will, that come out. So one of those main branches, trunks, has died all the way down to the bottom. Not sure what happened there, but I was wondering if my tree was reaching the end of its life.
Well, you know, I've never known a Satsuma tree to die of old age.
Okay.
They live a long time. It's unusual that you had a lot of branches coming, and I'm trying to imagine this. Near the base of your Satsuma tree, you should be seeing a knot, kind of a knotty thing that's about, 6 inches high, about 8 inches high off the ground, that's wider than the wood above it. Do you see that?
I'll have to go take a look.
Yeah. Well, So the biggest thing is let's trim this thing off. I don't know what happened to it. Can't tell you what happened. If you can get in there, I know it's going to be kind of hard to get under there, but if you can get under there and you can take me a good picture and send it to me, I might be able to make a more informed decision. about what it is that's going on with that Satsuma. Occasionally you'll see limb die back on a Satsuma, but not like you're describing quite. I don't see that very often. So I'd love to see it, and I'll shop the idea around and see what we come up with, okay?
Okay. You know, the reason I called it a tree/bush is that it always seems to grow out rather than up.
And that is very typical of a Satsuma, and that's one of the great things about them, if you think about it. So, I always try to imagine the Japanese farmer in Satsuma Prefecture in Japan who first saw this tree, who saw the first Satsuma in that came up from a seed probably in, say, 1500, 1600 A.D., And he's looking at this tree, and he says, man, it's got great fruit. It's seedless. Everything about it, it's just delicious. And look at it. I don't even have to get a ladder to pick it because it weeps, and the branches drop down to the ground. So this the weeping habit of this Satsuma is a really nice thing. If you've got, as long as you give it space, it's great. You don't have to get a ladder to pick most of the fruit. I've got a Ponkan. Which is a tree I love very much, but man, it grows straight up, and it's a neat tree, and it's got great fruit, but it grows straight up, and I got to haul the ladder out every time I pick it.
Yeah.
So don't.
The only thing we've done to this, we've kind of selectively trimmed some of the longer shoots that are growing out.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we did, from listening to you, was probably wrong. We never picked those heavy fruit off the end where they got more than three in a clump.
Yeah. It's hard to do, particularly as your tree gets older. I mean, there are so many of them out there. Now, I thinned my tree for the first time in a long time this year because I felt like it didn't have enough leaves on it, and I didn't want to get it stressed. But it's kind of a pain to go in and prune off all those fruits. And usually after about 10 or 15 years, you just kind of assume that the tree is going to be able to – you just kind of say, okay, tree, take care of yourself because I'm not going to go pick all those little fruits. So it's particularly important when the tree is young. It's less – it may be somewhat less important as it gets older, though it will lead to alternate bearing. It's just so much trouble. You're doing fine. Send me a picture.
It's been pretty distressed, and it has only very few small fruit on it at this point. But I noticed the other day it's starting to put out some new sprouts on the other side of the tree.
Yeah. So did this limb – send me a picture of the whole tree. Send me a picture of the close-up. Is it in a pretty exposed area, Rob?
Yeah, it's wide open.
Yep. And where in Mobile roughly do you live?
In the Fowl River area.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. That is just really fascinating. Cold weather can cause limb dieback. There's no question. That can happen. And I've seen it happen. It's going to be less likely that it would happen down on Fowl River unless you live far away from the river. But send me a picture. Send me a picture of the overall trees. Try to send me a picture of the close-up of that trunk. And I'll take a look at it. Send it to me today if you can, or next week, or send them to me next week during the show, and I'll have a chance to review them really carefully.
Okay, Plain Gardening at Yahoo?
Yeah, no. In fact, the number that you called in, you just take a picture on your phone, and you text me that picture. Isn't that simple?
Okay.
With your phone.
Great. Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks, Rob. Okay, so I think we may have lost a couple of callers because we had some good questions and I was trying to get to everybody. Bruce, I can't tell whether I answered your question about hurricane preparedness. Maybe I did. I can't tell whether you asked me the question about the cypress tree. But, Bruce, if I missed your question about hurricane preparedness, feel free to give me a call back. David, I'm looking at David's. David has got this gagutsa measured every way you could measure it with his foot. David, I don't know how big your foot is, but that is a big gagutsa. There's no question. We should talk about gagutsa. Yeah, we have a song about gagutsa.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we wander. 6 foot 7 The Husqvarna Fleet Program is back at Robert Stowe Power Equipment. Husqvarna and Robert Stowe Power Equipment have teamed up to bring you the best deals on commercial zero turns of the season. Listen up, landscapers. Right now, get a Husqvarna commercial zero turn starting at $136 a month for qualified buyers and receive a blower and string trimmer for free. Do you feel like the yard work never ends? Husqvarna's robotic 450X auto mower gives you a better looking lawn with less effort. The auto mower maneuvers around your lawn without supervision, even over tricky terrain and obstacles. It knows when it needs power and directs itself back to the charging station. With convenient control options, the auto mower allows you to set it and forget it, even from your smartphone. Thanks to Husqvarna, you can have a great looking lawn and more time to enjoy it this summer. Visit Robert Stowe Power Equipment today to see how they can help with all your lawn and garden needs. Highway 59 South in Robertsdale, right at the split by the Catholic Church. Or visit them online at robertstowepower.com. Husqvarna, ready when you are.
Attention gardeners, A. Bloom Garden Center's huge annual July sale is going on now. Mention you heard it here for more savings. That's right, just mention you heard it on FM Talk 106.5 for an additional 10% off. This is A. Bloom's largest sale every year, so visit soon for the best bargain selections. For more details, see A. Bloom Garden Center on Facebook or go to abloomgardencenter.com. A. Bloom, 116 Alverson Road in West Mobile, near Schillinger and Old Shell. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, now closed on Sundays. A. Bloom, improving your outdoor living.
If you're experiencing a temporary financial hardship and are struggling to pay your mortgage, we may be able to help you keep your home. Hardest Hit Alabama is a federally funded foreclosure prevention program. If you qualify, Hardest Hit Alabama can pay your mortgage payments on your behalf or provide other forms of assistance. The program is available statewide on a first-come, first-served basis. We've helped thousands of Alabama homeowners, and we may be able to help you. Call 1-877-497-8182 to speak to a program counselor, or visit hardesthitalabama.com to learn more and apply. That's 1-877-497-8182 or hardesthitalabama.com. Brought to you by Hardest Hit Alabama, the Alabama Broadcasters Association, and this station.
It's that time of year. It's on everyone's mind. You've made your plans and preparations if a hurricane impacts our area. Now, what you need more than anything else is accurate information. Where is the storm going? How intense are the winds? What kind of storm surge can you expect? When you need to know, you need Dr. Bill Williams, founder of the University of South Alabama's Coastal Weather Research Center and Mobile's only full-time radio meteorologist. When the information matters, and it has to be right, Mobile's first choice is Dr. Bill Williams on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, so David is pointing out to me that he picked them. They are not nearly as long as they were last time he picked them, because we thought maybe that the really long ones could get really a little bit tougher. So he picked them at 2 feet. I think he did a good thing. And we're going to hear more about it.
What do you do with them?
What do you do with them? You cook them like squash. And David, you know, there's Charlie. He's asking, what do you do with them?
Can you dry them out and use them like a gourd with a rattle in it?
Well, yeah, no. I don't know. But you know, you cook them, and yeah. And David's got the recipes. I mean, these are. This is a big Louisiana kind of thing.
Is he going to bring us some?
Families in Louisiana, traditional gugusa squash.
Yeah,
was traditional in a lot of Louisiana cooking because of that Italian influx, and they love gugusa, and it grew really well there. And it's got more flavor than squash. David, comment please. I'm out on a limb here. I'm out on a limb here. Hey, can we talk about this swallowtail butterfly real quick before we run out of time? So, listen, Jim, you remember the black swallowtails that you had that were flitting around in your yard? That's their caterpillars, and they eat the parsley. I don't think it's a big problem that they eat the parsley, because it kind of keeps the parsley from going to seed, if you see what I'm saying. And once it goes to seed, it's going to die out anyway, and it's going to want to go to seed. If it's young parsley plants, then you need to cover them with something. But I don't usually have a problem on the young plants. It's just the old plants. Black swallowtails. It's the black eastern swallowtail that does it. It's a very interesting thing. And I it just occurred to me, what did black swallowtails eat before they started eating parsley? And I asked myself that question, and then it clicked. Well, of course I know what they're eating. They're mostly out eating things like water hemlock, which are poisonous. And so we think of the black swallowtail as a mimic. I know this is nerdy, but it's an important thing because we kind of distort our image of things by what they eat in our gardens. Out in the wild, they're actually eating poisonous foods, which probably makes the caterpillar and the butterfly itself poisonous. So it's not a true mimic. It's actually like pipevine swallowtails. It is actually poisonous. The butterfly is poisonous when it eats its native foods, which keeps the birds from eating it. And here's the other thing. It's not poisonous to you or to anything else. And it's really beautiful.
I think I saw it too.
Yeah. What's that? You think what now?
I think I saw two black swallowtail butterflies around my ligustrum plants that I put out.
Yep. Yep.
I guess the color attracts them or something.
Yeah. Well, they go for any kind of.
But they are so beautiful.
They're beautiful. Yeah. It's the caterpillars that they're eating, and they'll go. The adults will go for anything. I'll have to make him a dish. So David is sending me a message. Who's growing the gugusa? Saying if he gets as many as he did 2 years ago, he's going to make a dish and bring y'all some. He says, "Keep your fingers crossed."
We're always open for free food.
Johnny has got a great crop of Hamlins, and it's worth talking about Hamlins. They're very hard to find now, but Hamlins were the great orange of the Gulf Coast. They were the ambrosia orange. I don't have a Hamlin. I almost wish I did. I got so many citrus in my yard, but Hamlins are a great tree, really great tree. Another great, if I were going to grow one orange for the Gulf Coast, it would be a Hamlin because they ripen at just the right time. They get really delicious around Christmas time, just in time for the ambrosia. They don't ripen. A lot of oranges ripen too late in the year, and so they get a little bit frozen out, and they have some problems. But Hamlins are really great. They come in at a perfect time, come in early, just in time for Christmas, look really good. So, I'm looking at this dead branch. I'm going to get – Charlie, I got to have your magnifying glass today. I'll get it. We're going to run out of time, but I got to look at all these things. We got some pictures of this citrus, which I'm going to be thinking about what happened to it. I'm going to look at it as closely as I can. Send me a little bit of a closer picture. Wind resistant sable palmetto. Sable palmetto, there is nothing more wind resistant that I know of than a sable palmetto. It is the tops. It is, here's the interesting thing. And not just wind resistant, but everything resistant. So here you had this bulldozer of 20-foot, 20-foot wall of water pours in on Long Beach in Mississippi with Katrina. The live oaks, I said, they didn't do much damage to the live oaks because I don't see many damaged live oaks. Well, it turns out the live oaks had been dug out of the ground and moved up to the railroad tracks so that live oaks didn't look damaged because there weren't any live oaks. They had been pulled out of the ground. The cypress had been pulled. The sable palms were the only trees left. Sable palmetto is the most wind-resistant creature you could have in your yard. If you got a tree next to your house, sable would be the one to have because it's fairly safe and not a problem. We're going to look carefully at this tree, at this Satsuma tree, and I'm going to be commenting on it next week, looking a little bit more carefully at it. David, you'll excuse me for saying, David, that's a Bigfoot. And that's a big squash. David is using his foot to measure the squash. So now I have a point of reference. What else have we got to clear up here before we run out of time this morning? Boy, we had so many subjects. We're still looking for maybe the ultimate okra recipes. Ultimate okra recipes, still worth having those. Next week, I want you to be prepared because we have to start talking about fall. We're going to do the hardest thing for gardeners to do, and yet it's the hardest and most important thing that gardeners can do, and that is think ahead. Think ahead. You've got to do it. It is the one thing, you know, because you will not have a fall if you can't imagine what fall is like next week. There it is. I'm saying it. It's very, very important. So we're going to talk next. Be ready. We're going to order some seeds. We're going to sow some seeds. We're going to get that fall garden ready because we've got to have it going. And now is the time to be starting that the fall garden. I know it's hot, but it's going to be cooling off. You'll be in a little better mood for it next week because it's going to cool off.
Should we bring our notebooks?
I would say, Charlie said, bring your notebook. It is very important to bring your notebook, and let's talk about it. And then Charlie, don't let me forget to talk about this Satsuma and the dead branch on this Satsuma. I'm going to take a close look at it. We're going to have a little bit of information about that next week. And thinking about the breeze, it was so fun to talk about pines this week, guys. Really good. That was fun. We should do that more often. I'm interested. You know, we're here to rehabilitate the image of pines. I don't know what happened, but they're beautiful trees. You know, there's a symphony. In Italy, they wrote a symphony to their pines, the pines of Rome. It's really great. It's pretty good, but it's fun to listen to. You know, it's cool. We'll have to play the Pines of Rome. Let's play the Pines of Rome next week.
Levee's going to break.